Assignment 6, a public interest series of the station presents San Juan Heritage, a realistic look at the history of the great San Juan Basin and its people. Your hosts for this series are Dr. Robert Delaney, head of the Center for Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College, and Mr. Arthur Wyatt, former state representative and longtime resident of the basin. Their guest for tonight's program, Mr. Fred Krager, with the subject for tonight, water, Colorado's most valuable natural resource. Let's join our guests.
Water rights and some things like that that I think the people would like to know.
Well, you know, the first irrigation that we have in recorded history was in the Euphrates River Valley, and King Hammurabi back in Babylonian times had quite an irrigation system built to provide food for his people. And then during that same era, there was an extensive irrigation projects put in along the Nile River. And one of the interesting things that history records is that those civilizations disappeared when people got to where they didn't want to do too much work, and they let these ditches and all fill up with silt and could no longer grow the food. And so those projects disappeared from use. Now here in the our country, the Spanish brought irrigation to us, and they got it from the Moors. And their first projects in Colorado goes back to one up on the Fountain River in about 1841, another on the Picket Wire, another on the St. Charles, and the most interesting one, I think of all, was the John Hatcher Ditch out about 20 miles northeast of Trinidad on the Picket Wire.
Yeah.
And that ditch was built and to raise feed for the freight teams where they were freighting from Bent's Fort over to Taos, New Mexico.
Bent had some Bent, irrigation there at the fort for a while.
Yes, he had 60 acres down there. Mm-hmm. And they built a ditch and planted their crop, and before they got to harvest it, well, the Indians come in and raided the place and destroyed all the crop, so they didn't get to harvest it. These other projects that I've mentioned have all been wiped out by Indian raids and never got to be very extensive, even the John Hatcher ditch. And in fact, it was wiped out two or three times. And it was one of the older ditches in the state, but it didn't have a continuous use, so that the first water right in Colorado was granted to a ditch taken out of the Kluber River over San Luis, Colorado, in the San Luis Valley. And in 1952, April 8th, 9th, and 10th, a symposium on water was held. The first 2 days were held over at Alamosa, and the third day, April the 10th, was held down at San Luis, and there they dedicated a monument and to the commemoration of the first 100 years of water on a decree given in Colorado, the first decree. Yeah. And that was April 10th, 1852, April 10th, 1952.
And that ditch was in
continuous use
all of that
and
time.
Still is.
And the first water rights, recorded water rights, are there.
Are
they not?
And not only those, but that one, but eight others, mm-hmm. The first nine water rights recorded in the state of Colorado is in the San Luis, Colorado area. That's the town of San Luis down in the south end of the valley.
Freddie, we were talking about the amount of water and what's available for, well, this planet Earth, and you had some interesting stuff on
yes.
that paper that I think a lot of people would be interested in, because I didn't know those figures. I didn't know the total amount of water or just what limited amount we did have for use.
This gives the total world water supply, and it's rather interesting. 326 million cubic miles of water, and 1 cubic mile is 1,101,000,000 117 million plus gallons. But the problem is that 97.2% of this is in the oceans, and 2% is frozen in glaciers and ice caps, and only 0.8% is the usable portion, and this is not evenly distributed or properly used.
It certainly isn't. This interests me. Now, 97% in the ocean, 2% is frozen in ice caps, only 0.8% then is usable.
That's
and,
right.
This is something we can't make, and yet we don't lose. There's a cycle of water. It's about the same now as it was a million years ago, say, or something. Is this true?
That's the idea. The water is neither developed or lost appreciably. And we have the same amount of water and some of the same molecules of water that were here forever. Someone said that perhaps in the next glass of water that you drank, you may have some of the molecules of water that were in the Red Sea when Moses led the Jews across from Egypt.
There's no such thing as water that's never been used.
No. Of course, this process, this evaporation and the falling of water from the atmosphere and then the evaporation again is nature's way of cleaning and purifying our water.
You, Arthur, and you, Freddie, while you're here, I know there's something that I don't understand very well, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't. One of you, just what is a water right, or what is an acre foot of water, or a second foot of water, and how are these rights acquired, and things like that? What's first use, and so on?
Well, the first use of water establishes the right. Now, Colorado law recognizes that a man who built a ditch and irrigated land and was the first on that stream had number one water right on that stream. And in order to get that water right, he has to make a filing with both the district court of the district in which he lives and with the state water engineer. And that water then is recorded. The district court decrees it to him as water right number one. Then the amount of water is also mentioned in that decree because he's not allowed to take out more water than is necessary to irrigate the land that he took the ditch out for. Mm-hmm. Now, an acre foot of water and a second foot of water is entirely two different things. A second foot of water flowing through a measuring head gate will cover 1 acre 2 feet deep in 24 hours. So in 24 hours, 1 second foot is equal to 2 acre feet. And water is measured through what now the common use, the partial measuring device in the head gate. Mm-hmm. And that is the speed of the water and the depth and the width of it is measured, and it gives you the either acre or second foot flow.
And was a lot of this water law, as it currently is used in the Southwest, developed from Colorado's experience?
Mostly.
And a lot from California's experience?
Well, California, you see, has a dual system. They use the riparian rights as well as the decreed rights. Mm-hmm. And the riparian rights and the decreed rights have been in conflict so much out there that their water problems are really greater now than they were years ago.
Yes.
The shortage of water has created a demand that has caused this conflict. Now, riparian right is that a man can use the water that flows through his place but must replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes available to the man below him and he must replace it.
Mm-hmm.
But where a ditch is taken out and leaves that stream and the water, some is evaporated and the other subs back, it's not that part that evaporates is not replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have their conflicts, and it's resulted in many court cases, and I don't think they'll ever be settled until they come back to the right of decree as far as irrigation water is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, on November the 5th, 1861, the first Colorado territorial legislature passed the first water laws in Colorado, recognizing the right of a man to take water from the stream living stream through a ditch to his land. But they also recognized that the taking of that ditch through land might affect some a value of some other body, a person's property. And so they provided for damages there and provided for a committee to be set up to evaluate the damages that would be assessed against the builder of the ditch.
Justice of the Peace Court.
Yeah, and a Justice of the Peace Court.
Right.
Of course, they were really the only courts we had until they were established by law by that first legislature.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the first big ditches after the San Luis was the Greeley project, was it not?
That's right.
And an interesting thing about that is that this yoke that's up here on the fireplace, which belongs to Arthur Wyatt, was used in the digging of that ditch. And that was 1867. Is
1867.
That,
mm-hmm. My information is that that yoke belonged to Mr. Eaton. And
you better tell him who Eaton
and
was.
And Mr. Eaton was one of the early men who came to Colorado and later joined the Greeley Colony and built the first big ditch in that area. He later became governor of the state of Colorado and served in many other commissions and the like for the state. He was one of the real pioneers in government in the state of Colorado. An interesting thing about those ox yokes, many men were contracting and building ditches, and they most nearly all used oxen because of the heavy type of work. And so in order to know their own equipment, each man painted his ox yokes a different color. Some painted them red, others blue, some yellow. And this one, as far as I can find, I find a little evidence of some red.
Some red. Mm-hmm.
So
pretty well worn off.
It's pretty well worn off. I had to look for it. But
that's really a heavy-duty yoke, isn't it?
It's wider than the regular wagon yoke because it was built for a plow and for slips. And you'll notice that there's rings on it so that chains can be carried through and more than one team of oxen used.
Yes.
That is two teams used in tandem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Art, what river did this diversion?
It came out of the Cashalapooter above below Fort Collins, the first ditch. You know, there was another interesting thing. The first two ditches came out below Fort Collins. The number one ditch was the upper ditch, and the number two ditch was the lower there. And then another group of the colony came in and built in the Fort Collins area and built a ditch and took their water out above them and created quite a bit of controversy. But those people were aware of the absolute necessity of the use of water, and they entered into agreements. And they built a big dam, a lake, so that would be filled from the ditch number one. And since ditch number one would have the third priority during the low water period, they took the water from the river, and the higher priorities took theirs from the lake,
mm-hmm.
so that they interchanged their water through common agreement, and that was the first common agreement made on the reuse of water or the re-regulation of water made in the state of Colorado.
This is an exchange of water just as such as we use on the Colorado River system.
Absolutely the same thing now.
Well, Freddie, about that Colorado River compact and all of that, you're deeply involved in a lot of these things. How does it look to you, the projects that are in Congress for this year? Is anything going to pass? Is anything going to be done? Do we wait for next year? Is it dead or just what?
I would say that it would require an awful lot of luck to have the H.R. 4671 pass in this session. We're just plain running out of time. There's been a lot of opposition and a lot of controversy. And this was a tremendous bill because it had compromises and agreements through the seven states, the seven Colorado River states.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that my guess would be that it's too late, but a miracle, it could still happen.
Good. Can I throw a loaded question at you, if you don't mind? Do you want to say anything about the current controversy, say, between people who are backing up the Bureau of Reclamation and, say, the Marble Canyon Project and the Sierra Club and the people who are supporting them? How do you feel about this?
Well, of course, I've worked long and hard on Colorado River water and Colorado River development, and I find myself with mixed emotions because I think that often dams are attempted to be built where it isn't absolutely necessary that they be, and if there's alternate sources of storage, then these things should be considered, and there are more values than just the water. But also there are more values than merely retaining miles and miles of savage wild canyon, which no one can see. Mm-hmm. I think the Sierra Club is not taking a total view of the situation, and yet I think the Sierra Club serves a useful purpose in making us evaluate the various locations. In this case, I think the Bureau has done a real good job of evaluating these projects, and there's been a lot of information that's been construed and mixed up somewhat.
Yes. Well, if you'd consider just the power alone, it could possibly be done with fossil fuel or coal or oil, or could it as cheaply?
Well, I'm not smart enough to really know all the answers, but there are more than one side to this. Mm-hmm. They say definitely that our thermal plants that use coal or oil operate at a lower cost per kilowatt hour, but they have to have a rather sustained level load, and they're not subject to high surge peak yeah. demand, mm-hmm. and they can move hydropower on and off the line but merely by opening a valve. And this makes the two rather complement each other. They supplement each other, and as such, peaking power has some values over and above the other kind of power. Then there's something else that I think should be considered, and that's that every time we burn a ton of coal or a gallon of oil or a cubic foot of gas, we have actually utilized one of our natural resources.
Yes.
And when we run a second foot of water through a turbine, we have not destroyed anything.
It comes back. It'll
be backed, mm-hmm. and can flow continuously. So we are actually conserving, as a conservationist, we are conserving many of our resources to use as much hydropower as we can.
So there definitely are two sides this whole thing. One other question in reading about this. Actually, how much water would be backed up into the national park area?
Well, the national park borders the lake area, the proposed lake area of the Hualapai. This was formerly called the Bridge Canyon Dam. And there's 13 miles of the border that joins this. Mm-hmm. None of it would actually be backed into the
park.
National park.
Mm-hmm.
The National Monument, there is some water backed into it, and provision was made when it was authorized to do this.
And then the other dam, the Marble Canyon.
It's several miles above the Grand Canyon, and it's it leaves 104 miles between the upper reaches of the Hualapai Dam and the Marble Canyon Dam, and a portion of that is within the Grand Canyon National Park.
Actually within the confines
that's,
of the park.
That's right. Mm-hmm. All of the park is within this, and then there is additional.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's another thing that the Sierra Club has stressed so much, and that's been recreation. How many people have gone through the Grand Canyon? I saw a statement a while back that out of all time, since Powell took his party down through there, it had been some 662 people had seen it. Now, if the...
You mean down in the bottom?
Been down in the bottom.
And actually
been through and seen
yes.
the canyon.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That goes back to the 1840s. So if in the last 120 years only 762 people have seen it, I would think that the several millions that are affected by the water in this area would be more important to have it utilized than to save it for some recreation or some purpose of that kind, whereas the dams themselves will provide recreation.
In October of 1965, I went on a boat tour on Lake Powell. We went to the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
We were told at that time that uh, they they had records of about 4,500 people having been there prior to the development of Lake Powell. And since Lake Powell was completed, about 50,000 people have been there. So within a period of a couple of years, this has been opened up so that the many people can see and enjoy this. It's a beautiful canyon. It doesn't fill the canyon totally full. It merely opens it up and makes a waterway in which it can be viewed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back again from 1910 to 2 years ago, 4,500 people, and in 2 years, 50,000. More people are getting beneficial use out of the area from a recreation standpoint then, forgetting the other uses. Mm-hmm. You know, another one of the big problems we've had in connection with our water has become the tremendous amount of water needed to keep our cities and industries going. And the priority of water up to now has been, number one, production of food. Mm-hmm. Number two, domestic use for our cities. And number three, industry. Mm-hmm. So that now we are getting to more and more to a complete utilization of water. And we have that total utilization brings around about some other interesting problems. We have one of the largest oil shale deposits in the world here in Colorado, the largest known reserves of oil in the world. It's going to take a lot of water to when they go to produce that oil. And an engineer 4 years ago testified that it would take 250,000 acre-feet a year and that there would be no recovery because it would be vapored off in steam. In other words, evaporation.
No recovery at all.
So there is an industrial use that is a complete utilization of water without any recovery.
Yes.
Now in our cities, we have the recovery system through our sewers and the like, and the purification of the waters and the running over the sands and the like, and the water is used and reused below the cities in irrigation. One of the interesting things of the about the South Platte Valley, one of the great recovery basins of the country, if 300,000 acre-feet of water runs down the Cashalaputa River, measured water, by the time the river leaves the state the other side of Julesburg, they will have used 1 million acre-feet of irrigation. Mm-hmm. Because that water placed on the land filters back to the stream, mm-hmm. taken out in another ditch, used again, filters mm-hmm. back, certain percent is always eliminated by evaporation.
Evaporation, sure.
But the rest of it percolates back through the soil until it leaves the state, and we have made use and reuse and reuse of that water,
wow.
both through our cities, for both the city use, the domestic use in the cities, the industrial use, and the irrigation through the farms. And then we've come to another problem, particularly in our eastern plains and in the San Luis Valley, and that's groundwater.
Oh, yes,
and
this is getting to be a big problem.
And it's today we're having quite a bit of controversy between well owners and
yes.
ditch owners and the like, so that it's going to, if we're going to make the maximum use of water, again, we're going to have some exchanges made, some give and some take to make the maximum use of it.
Right. Some adjustments, just like was done up there, taking part out of the lake and part out of the
stream.
Freddie, when was this seven-state compact signed? How long has this been going on?
Well,
and how much actually goes to Mexico and the lower basin and so on?
The original compact was developed in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
This merely divided. It was they had compact commission meetings day after day and week after week, and finally decided they would be unable to divide the water between the states, so they tried to divide it then between the upper and lower basins.
Yes.
And this is where this Lee's Ferry measurement came about.
Right.
Former President Hoover was chairman of this commission. A man by the name of Carpenter from Greeley represented Colorado at the hearings. And it was assumed that the Colorado River had vast amount of of runoff. They were thinking in terms of 20, 22 million acre feet per year. So they divided, they attempted to divide the river on the basis of 15 million acre feet, and they gave 7.5 million acre feet to the lower basin states and seven and a half
to the upper basin states.
That's right, except that they allotted the first 7.5 million acre feet to the lower basin states, and this is the bottom of the stream, and this is the hard part, you know, that's so it's caused problems. The upper basin states then got together in 1948 and divided their water further into the four upper basin states. Colorado gets 51.75% of their allotment, of the upper basin allotment. Utah, 23%, and New Mexico, 11.25%, and the balance goes to Wyoming. I think that's about 12%.
Well, and then out of that, Colorado furnishes 72%.
Yes, that's right.
To the Colorado River, where the other three states, or other two states, furnish the balance of 28%.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we are the big water state, and yet we were allotted back 20% less than we produce.
Than the state of Colorado produces.
Well, Art, it's even worse than that. Yeah. We get 51.75% of something less than half of the river, so we get less than 25% of the total flow to develop.
I said, though, out of the allotment.
Mm-hmm.
Of ditches around here, I understand one of the first ditches in this area right around, now I'm not talking about Mesa Verde and... Of course, we know there was irrigation there and probably a lot of other places that we don't know about. But I mean, since settlement in this area by the Anglo-Americans, one of the first ditches is out here at the La Plata, I understand.
And it's the one that goes over into Thompson Park.
Into Thompson Park. And we were talking, you said that somebody had told you a long, long time ago the Chinese laborers who had quit working on the railroad had helped to build that. I've looked. And I can't find anything on that at all.
Well, as I said, told you at the time, I've been searching for information on it ever since the story was told to me.
Yeah.
But the ditch that they put into Thompson Park was laid on the route of a ditch that was already there when they brought the water into Thompson Park for irrigation.
I see.
So it could have been Chinese, and it could have been somebody else. You never know.
And
it could have been the miners when they brought it into plaster, too.
Yes, they wanted to plaster that
bar out
on
there.
The La Plata River, and found out it was just too fine to do much with. Yeah. Wasn't that the story on that?
That's right. Well, irrigation has come a long ways in this country, and we're having the results of it here in our basin as it provides most of our economy now. Agriculture.
And for what we have here in the city, and remember, no restrictions this year, things like that. It's the lifeblood of this whole Southwest country. This is the theme of a lot of writers about the Southwest. The Southwest is hard to define, but they can kind of define it on the amount of water or the way the sky looks, like Sky Determines is the name of a recent, fairly recent book about the Southwest. And It is just so vital that the more people realize that it's vital, the better off this whole area of the San Juan Basin is, particularly in the Southwest in general. No doubt about that.
Doctor, this I think can be summarized a bit by saying that the ultimate and final growth and development of our San Juan Basin and all of the West, but to bring it closer home, our own area, will finally be exactly equal to the supply of our water.
I think that is
a true. Assignment 6, a public interest service of the station, has brought you San Juan Heritage, produced by this station in cooperation with the Center for Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College. Your host for this series, Dr. Robert Delaney and Mr. Arthur Wyatt. Their guest for tonight's program, entitled Water, was Mr. Fred Krieger. Be watching on October 4th at the same time for the next in this series. San Juan Heritage is produced under the direction of the Director of Information at Fort Lewis College. Engineering by Leonard Wilson. Camera by Dave Glenn. This is Jack Welch speaking and thanking you for joining us on San Juan Heritage.
You were concerned with it in the legislature for, I'm sure, many different times.
Oh, many times.